It's not closed or half open. Why? Because, as I said, that they are guardians of the Muslim holy places.
And that's what's stopping them from normalizing up to this moment. That's what's holding them back.
This is one. They are afraid that any normalization would empower the stand of Iran, who is saying that Israel is occupying Palestine and so on. And at the same time, the street in Saudi Arabia, don't take only the what is said in the media of the Saudi Arabia or even in the Gulf. But if you go down to the people are opposing such kind of relation with this entity, with this Israeli or Zionist state. Mm-hmm. And that's why the Saudi Arabia were said it bluntly, and as we say, it was crystal clear. They said that no normalization without a serious, irreversible step towards a Palestinian state.
Okay.
And this, of course, according to Israel, is an impossible issue.
Okay, but why do some Israelis believe that it's for the benefit of the Saudis to go into normalization? Because that will guarantee Saudi's social and Saudi national security. That's what the Israelis feel sometimes when they view about Saudi Arabia. They feel that the Saudis are in need of the protection of the Israelis in order to preserve their national security.
Saudi Arabia is not in need of Israeli protection. Saudi Arabia and the Gulf is in need
of the United States. But Emirates is benefiting a lot, United Arab Emirates.
Yes, economically.
Yes, maybe Saudi Arabia
politically,
wants to say.
But not in security.
Okay.
Because the Gulf is protected by the United States. The military bases are...
So it's a different matter.
Of course. Here, the United States is not Israel. Although they are very close allies and they are with great relations, but the interests are different. Mm-hmm. And Saudi Arabia is working now economically as well as politically and avoiding the embarrassment that will face if any step of normalization had taken place, especially that there are something waiting.
Okay.
Who is waiting? Iran and its allies, they consider.
Okay, that's moving to what can be called field normalization, Dr. Muhammad. Moving to what can be called field normalization, where work continues on creating railway lines connecting some Arab countries with the Israeli entity. Your opinion on the continuation of the work on the railway line between some Arab countries and Israelis, despite the massacres that has been taking place in Lebanon, Gaza, Yemen, Syria?
I think that the UAE, it means the Emirates, they have normalization between them and Israel. They are normal
officially.
But
what about some other countries that are still continuing the work in the railway line?
This is economically. Now the United States is also approving this and saying that go on, proceed, having the East, which is Emirate, Gulf, and the West, which is the Mediterranean. And they want this railway and for economical reasons in order to confront what is China doing.
Okay.
You have to take it in this prospect. We cannot say that the Chinese influence is not there. It is to block the more relations with China. And at the same time, we must know that what goes on between the Emirates and Israel and Israel is mostly economic, mostly logistic, mostly technological, and so on. The question is, what if the oil stopped? What can they do?
Yes.
Then everything will be collapsed.
Okay, so it's based on these aspects. Dr. Muhammad Qasem, writer and political analyst, thank you very much for your analysis in today's episode.
What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Bazaar. Iran is associated with many things. If you are into geology, that would be oil oozing out of the land. Iran is among the world's top five in oil reserves. But oil or petroleum is not the only mineral resource that makes the country rich. Copper is among its other riches, as are lead and zinc.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. In case you didn't know, Iran has over 220 million tons of proven zinc and lead ore reserves. That is significant. But in copper, it has stood among the top 10. What is being done about all that treasure? It can't all stay underground forever. And there are those extracting and producing the minerals. To meet some of them, we made a trek to Zarin Industrial and Mining Group.
In 2009, Iran produced 383,000 tons of copper, meaning it had the world's ninth largest reserves of copper at 32.5 million tons. As a matter of fact, the mines at Sarcheshme in Kerman province contain the world's second largest load of copper ore, that is 5% of the world's total in 2009. Iran is one of the most important mineral producers in the world, ranking among 15 major mineral-rich countries. It was estimated to hold some 68 types of minerals, 37 billion tons of proven reserves, and more than 57 billion tons of potential reserves worth $770 billion in 2014.
That is not to say mining in Iran has no more work to be done on it. It is still under development, but there are plenty of doers in this country, and plenty more are waiting for further opportunity to arise for their turn at investment. Zarin Group has already arrived at a point to claim we have done what we could.
Flotation, or in other words, ore dressing in mineral processing, is a main process of reduction. It is a method used to separate and concentrate ores by altering their surfaces to a hydrophobic or hydrophilic condition. These chemical and physical changes to the surface of minerals are made using materials with different properties, including activators.
Now, in working with minerals, the production process is most efficiently carried out in stages. And what a company just cannot do without is its laboratory for pilot tests before going head in with its whole stock. It is literally to avoid the proverbial haste that makes waste.
An asset to corporations is their R&D departments. The reason is they perform research for technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones, hence elevating the company's industrial standing.
Indeed, standard is everything, especially for foreign trade. And Iran's production, by far outweighing its domestic use, there is plenty of room for mineral exports from this country. The industry is export-oriented, as a matter of fact, according to Mr. Katkhodayi. Only 80 to 100,000 tons of produced zinc ingots and 50 to 80,000 tons of lead ingots are consumed domestically.
And the remaining were exported to target markets in Asia and Europe, going by 2014 and 2015 estimates. The National Iranian Copper Industries Company is one of the largest companies listed on the Tehran Stock Exchange. It was the largest non-oil exporter in Iran in 2010, with exports worth $1.3 billion. All right, everyone, it's time for me to pass it over to my dear friend and colleague out there on the field who has prepared an interesting feature for you. Let's go check it out.
Right now, millions of them are right on your skin, in your mouth, on your teeth, in your gut. They're everywhere. They can control your mind and they can control your mood. You heard me right. I'm talking about bacteria. And as terrifying as that might sound, because, you know, naturally you would think of these microorganisms as harmful little things that cause disease, you shouldn't really panic. You're fine. In fact, there are a lot more good bacteria in our body than bad bacteria.
Bacteria have got a bad reputation, and for good reason. Bacteria can cause pneumonia, meningitis, food poisoning, and a variety of other infections and diseases. These bad bacteria are the reason why we diligently disinfect our hands and wipe down places where germs tend to congregate, and we have not stopped there. To kill these bad microorganisms, we have developed a wide range of antibiotics. But this is not the whole picture. Our bodies are also home to an estimated 100 trillion good bacteria. They are essential to our survival and live in complete harmony with us humans.
It's a symbiotic relationship in which we both benefit, us humans and them good bacteria. It's called mutualism. Think of bees and flowers.
Bees fly from flower to flower to drink the sugary sweet nectar that is made by flowers. While drinking the nectar, bees get some pollen on their hairy bodies, and when they land on the next flower, some of the pollen will rub off their body and pollinate the plant. In this mutualistic relationship, the bees get to eat and the flowering plants get to reproduce. Similarly enough, we help good bacteria eat and thrive, and they in turn help our bodies digest food and absorb nutrients. They are also effective in preventing and treating conditions like obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and inflammations associated with autoimmune diseases.
The bacteria that I'm going to be talking about in this week's feature program are primarily present in our digestive system and in some foods and supplements. You've probably heard their name, probiotics. In order to learn how these probiotic supplements and products are made right here in Iran, I'm visiting a pharmaceutical company called Zistahmi. Here's more.
Actually, I should go back to around 20 years back when we started to think about probiotics in Iran. At that time, probiotic was a really very low profile subject in Iran. Nobody or a few people, even the physicians, did know about the benefits of probiotics. We started working in the University of Tehran, working as a thesis of students, and after a few years, we established this company, Zistahmir, in the incubator center of College of Pharmacy, and after 5 years, we could manage to establish this prestigious building and production facility outside in the outskirts of Tehran.
This is the storage room that houses a wide variety of raw materials that are used in the manufacturing process. There are various aisles and many shelves here. There's also a map locating everything. But the effective material, microbes, are not and cannot be kept in any ordinary storage room. Certain probiotic strains are stored at extremely low temperatures and in special freezers to avoid any kind of contamination. These microbial strains are then grown. This is called fermentation. At the end of this process, a broth is made, which contains a large number of probiotic organisms. Because this broth is in dilute form, it should be concentrated. That's when centrifugation comes into play and turns the broth into a cream-like substance. The paste is then spray-dried. The production of probiotics is a complex procedure and requires extensive skill and experience. Quality control is essential throughout the whole production process, from raw materials to the final product. Zistachmir is equipped with different laboratories and control rooms to ensure each stage in the production process is systematically controlled, high standards are met, and objectives are pursued.
At the moment, hopefully, Iran is very advanced in terms of probiotic products. I think that at the moment we have around 10 companies which are producing probiotics, and of course, because we have been the first company, we have a main market share in, comparing to other competitors in this field. So the probiotic industry in Iran is deeply rooted, we don't need to import any products or intermediate, anything from the outside.
The development of formulations requires extensive research on the best combination of strains. This is an ongoing process that keeps evolving by the day. Various research teams are at work to find new and more effective combinations. Depending on the indication, different probiotic strains are chosen and tested on their compatibility. In addition to the API, active pharmaceutical ingredients, research teams consider including other ingredients in the formulation, namely prebiotics, which are a type of fiber that human body cannot digest but serves as food for probiotics. Back to the clean room. These products are very expensive. Thus, by producing them inside Iran, the country can save a lot of money. And with that, I want to conclude my report of yet another company located in Pardis Technology Park.
And that wraps up our program for today. Stay tuned next week for another edition of Bozor.
Thank you. This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the will. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on Iron Bingish Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And yeah, obviously, the will is something that we should all be thinking about at some point. And not necessarily when we get really old and we think, well, we maybe just have another few years or 10 years, I don't know, 1 year to live. This is something that is sort of very important no matter what age we are. And look, I do, for example, I know of some, the son of one of my friends who is only 22. He had actually already done his will. He did what is now very sort of quite, has been quite current. He's recorded a little video where he sort of leaves his will. And this is what some of the young people too are doing. Then obviously in their will, they also talk about their commitment to Allah. So these little videos are quite beautiful. And, you know, so this is, and why should we be thinking about our will? Why should we be thinking about our death? And that is, one reason is, because we cannot take for granted that we're going to live, let's say, X number of days or years in this temporary life. We cannot take for granted that we're going to wake up tomorrow. And another reason is, we're also told that if we do engage in thinking, basically thinking about our death and basically organizing what we need to organize, that action in itself is said to extend our days. So it's really important, and this is not necessarily a sort of morose thing. It just means that, you know, we are approaching death, Day of Judgment, and hereafter with a level of seriousness that we, in a sense, appreciate what we need to do. Welcome back to A to Z here on Iron Bingish Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously I'm talking about thinking about our will, death, the hereafter. So these are some big topics, but these are topics that I think basically as soon as we, you know, for sure as we, as people have reached maturity in Islam, or even, or at least into our 20s, that's something that we can start to think about. And I gave an example of a young man, the son of one of my friends, who actually already has done this. But look, I also wanted to talk about just something from life of one of the famous martyrs of the Holy Defense, Said Can Bozorgi. So what he did, so this is before his martyrdom, he, for example, had given his wife precise instructions on how to handle all her affairs without him. And, you know, this is something that we will see with all the martyrs of the Holy Defense. Sometimes it was, this is the ones who were martyred in active duty on the front lines. We would see that a few days or a few weeks before their martyrdom, they, you know, they knew, and so they were able to give these sort of instructions. And then with others, for example, Martyr Said Can Bozorgi, so he obviously did this because he reached martyrdom after the Holy Defense, dying of serious injuries. And, you know, this is something that is then, they do that, and they could even be a few months before their martyrdom, because obviously the illness is progressing. And, you know, so I would urge everyone, especially everyone who has reached adulthood, you know, in their 20s and so on, to sort of start thinking about this and maybe start informing people, start writing something, and mentally start thinking about what's important, what do I need to do, what deeds do I need to send ahead of myself. And this is obviously the probably the most important thing there is not going to be a good hereafter unless we've actually thought about all the deeds that we can send ahead of ourselves and whether we're able to engage in the inner jihad and really purify away some of the sins. So that's the other very serious topic that as soon as we're thinking about our will, arises automatically. So I pray that all of us are able to sort of devote more, let's say, thinking time to this and actually planning, writing time. And I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on I'm Grief Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. The slogans in the placards are a protest to the law and the U.S. government's indifference towards the demands of the American women during the 60s and 70s. Indifference towards women's rights to education, equal pay, suitable jobs, respect and social rights. And most of all, protection against domestic violence. Of course, perhaps these women's anger was more towards the laws that did not have their back rather than their husbands. Women who were beaten at home by their husbands for different reasons, yet the law only supported them up until the door of their house. The law's excuse for this was not to intervene in the citizens' private affairs. Thus, when it came to the house, it was the men who made the law. The battered women would cover up their bruised faces with makeup, and there weren't many who were much inclined to speak about the things that happened to them inside the house.
Okay, let's go.
The men, on the other hand, did not shy away from violence towards their wives, due to the free pass the culture and law gave them in this regard. The women of America demanded rights to education, payment, and security.
Equal rights to set forth our own humanity, equal rights to get into graduate programs, to get into schools, to training programs. We're the bottom third of the employment in terms of pay. We represent nonetheless 34% of the workforce, yet we're the first to be laid off and the last to be hired. There aren't frivolous demands at all. We just want what men have had all these years.
This issue did not belong to past centuries. This is the United States of America of 1970. Although protests against domestic violence intensified during the second half of 1970, husbands abusing their wives and justifying their actions had roots in times as far as the first American immigrants who settled in those lands. When the first immigrants arrived in this region, they started to write laws for their newly founded America by forming a government. The first settlers of America took their law from the common law derived from the traditional rules of the British judicial system. Common law originated in England in the Middle Ages and was applied in British colonies across the continents. According to this law, a man had the right to punish his wife if needed. In 1982, an important event took place that marked the beginning of a review in the issue of domestic violence against women. Tracy Thurman, a housewife in the city of Torrington. First, in October 1982, Charles, Thurman's husband, had a fight with her and threw her out of the house. Tracy went to the police department, but the police did not handle her case because there was no law to support her. A month later, it happened again. This time, Charles, Tracy's husband, broke the car window on her while she was sitting in the car. Tracy's body was covered with broken glass. This time, because the crime happened outside the house, the police got involved, and the court issued a restraining order against Charles for 2 years. However, during this period of 2 years, Charles repeatedly violated the court's order, and each time Tracy's complaint did not result in anything. Charles even threatened to kill her once, but the police did not do anything about it. A few months later, when Tracy was at home with her child, her husband Charles entered their residence. Tracy called the police. Charles stabbed Tracy's neck, throat, and chest with a knife. At this moment, a police officer arrived, but Charles, without fear, kicked Tracy in the head with another hard blow. Tracy was now lying on the ground in her own blood, but the police still did not react. Charles was about to attack Tracy, who was sleeping on the stretcher of the emergency team. But this time, the police stopped watching and finally arrested Charles after he had inflicted multiple stabbings and hittings to Tracy's head several times. Tracy Thurman spent 8 months in the hospital. Some of her body parts were temporarily and others permanently paralyzed. This time, instead of suing her husband, Tracy sued the police department for not supporting and defending her. Now, women's slogans had become more uniform and coherent. Women unite. Don't let racism divide us. Girls are powerful. The rise of women's protests against men's violence, along with the liberal slogans, marked yet another event. Feminist movements were gradually born, and protests against the inferior status of women and the violence they endured at home began in the American society. American states, one by one, began to repeal the laws that allowed men to punish women.
What does International Women's Year mean to you?
I'm afraid not very much, really. I'm a bit old to be worried, you know.
Do you ever think about women's liberation?
I don't, to tell you the honest truth, no.
I think possibly I'm like a lot of women and depend a lot on a husband, you know. On the male race, I guess.
The US government, maintaining that a man's home is his castle, had traditionally been reluctant to police the confines of the home. Moreover, many legal authorities insisted on blaming the victim and believed that the wife was partially responsible for her beating by provoking her husband and making him angry. American laws allowed a man to punish a woman under the pretext of reforming her. The courts only considered the complaint of a beaten woman if the woman was severely injured during the beating by her husband.
Is a battered woman.
You are a battered woman?
Yes.
Who assaulted you?
My ex. He's in the house and I'm scared.
Is he in the house?
Yes, and I'm scared.
It's a frying pan that he threw at me. And I'll show you the nightgown that I have that's got full of blood on.
Oh, yeah. David, you're under arrest for domestic violence.
However, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was approved by the United Nations General Assembly in Paris on December 10, 1948, said something else. Article 1 of the Declaration. All human beings are born free and are equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood.
Approved by an overwhelming majority. The Declaration of Human Rights as a standard of conduct for all. And let us, as members of the United Nations, conscious of our own shortcomings and imperfections, join our effort in good faith to live up to this high standard.
But women were still deprived of such a right in America. Violence against women was considered normal. This normality can be understood in a joke that was broadcast on the BBC radio in the same years. A woman asks another why she feels her husband doesn't love her anymore. She hears the answer, he hasn't beaten me in a week or two.
How many domestic violence calls do you get on most nights?
Might not be unusual to have six or eight. Is this the first time this has happened?
He got pissed off at me and said I was attacking him, and then he started hitting me.
Little by little, various organizations started to deal with the domestic violence against women under the title of non-governmental organizations. The law changed, but the culture of violence against women still carries on. The slogan of gender equality gradually made women own rights that might have been funny to think about in the United States a few decades ago. In addition to the right to vote and the right to employment and equal wages, they now had the right to wear clothes. They could decide for the life or death of the fetus inside their womb, or they could even have other kinds of freedom in sexual issues. But did helpless women really join feminism movements to achieve such freedoms? Apparently, everything has benefited women. But there is still a problem. Women were still beaten by men. Liberalism. It reinforced racism, classism, and other forms of oppression. Women were now oppressed again. But this time, this oppression was not only from their husbands. Every man who had the chance to communicate with that woman would provide the basis for this, with sexual harassment and physical violence. These are official statistics from within the United States. Every year, about 500,000 people in America are victims of sexual violence, including 12-year-old children. However, 90% of the people who were raped are adult women.
She was my only sister, my younger sister. We were 5 years apart, but super close. She's my best friend growing up and into adulthood. She's the life of any party. She lit up any room she walked into. She had goals and dreams and aspirations that were taken from her at the young age of 20 years old. In a domestic violence situation, as we're here today to honor, she had been away from him about 3 or 4 months when she had restraining orders and PPOs. When he tracked her down and took her life. We organized a domestic violence walk in honor of my sister and those who have suffered through domestic violence, are victims or who are survivors, who have gotten out. Anybody and everybody who has been in a domestic violence situation, we're out here today to honor them and hopefully spread awareness that, you know, you're not alone and there are resources out here.
She was amazing. Good kid.
She was all about her family, always with me or her sister or her niece, her dad.
Never got in trouble.
Yeah, never in trouble. She's just a good person.
Yeah,
great
very
heart.
Good girl. Would help anybody. She'd get a little shirt off her back.
It's fucked up. It's pretty bad. It's sad. She's, you know, we miss her every day.
You know, she was my baby niece, you know, so it's been pretty rough. Think about her constantly.
She's a beautiful person, so loving and friendly, and like she said, she's a life of the party. She's a great person.
It's that, you know, it's sad that we have to do this because, you know, they took my niece from us. You know, it's sad that this is the thing we have to do, but we're trying to get justice for her, and we want people to be aware of it, what's going on.
2022. According to statistics, one out of every three women in the United States has experienced violence from her husband or partner. About 20,000 calls are made to the domestic violence help centers every day. And on the other end of the line are people who have been beaten or threatened with death by their spouses or partners. The phenomenon of violence against women in the United States may not be at the top of the world news like that of third world countries. But this does not mean that violence against women does not exist in the States. According to statistics from the National Office on Domestic Violence, one woman is battered every 9 seconds in the United States. Florida State Senator Janet Cruz's report is worth considering.
In Florida, there were 106,000 reported domestic violence offenses in 2020. And that was including more than 200 domestic violence murders.
This log home at Big Lake was one of Bree Moore's favorite places.
Her formal name is Brianna, but as she got older, she wanted to be called Bree.
Her parents say they can still feel her presence here.
She would get me up early in the morning and say, "Dad, come on, we've got to go ride. She made every minute out of her life special.
Police told the Moores their daughter's body was found at her boyfriend's home, where he lived with his parents. The Moores asked if there had been a home invasion.
They said no. They said Josh, her boyfriend, killed her.
Bree would be the last. Years later, what really was happening with Josh and in his history, this was really the inevitable.
But at the time, Bree seemed so devoted to her boyfriend, busy at her job as an aide in a dentist's office. But behind her smile, Bree's coworkers saw signs of trouble, signs they didn't reveal to the Moores until after her death.
They told me that she had come in several times with black eyes, and one time she came in and she hadn't just been hit, they said she had been beaten. And she couldn't function, and she vomited in the sink, and she left after about 15 minutes they sent her home.
There were other red flags.
Well, I'll read you a text message that we found on Bree's phone after we got her phone back 2.5 years after she was killed. Bree texts, "You better love me and stop hitting me, please," with an exclamation point. "Josh, of course I love you, and Ramrod hit you, not I." So Ramrod must have been, you know, when he got angry, I'm assuming.
Nadine M. Newfoyle, director of the Department of Violence Against Women at the U.S. Department of Justice, says, "Based on our findings in the United States, every day three women in this country are murdered by their spouse or ex-partner. This statistic is very alarming for us." Nadine M. Newfoyle's story is not the story of primitive African tribes or so-called third world countries. This is the United States of America in the year 2022, the 21st century, the cradle of freedom and democracy.
Because Brandy's case reminded Guard of Anitra Coburn.
Carter kidnapped Anitra and eventually took her to her grandparents' trailer in Franklin County.
Coburn's boyfriend kidnapped her from her Pitt County home and murdered her after holding her hostage for a week.
Half a century has passed since the protests of American women in 1970. And now, domestic violence has the voice of Angelina Jolie, a Hollywood star who was also once a victim.
Most of all, I want to acknowledge the children who are terrified and suffering at this moment, and the many people for whom this legislation comes too late.
A bipartisan group of U.S. senators has introduced a proposal to reauthorize a 1990s law that expands protections for victims of domestic and sexual violence. This law was dissolved in 2019 due to the opposition of Republicans, which has led to the promotion and increase of violence and murder in American society. Angelina Jolie asks U.S. senators to approve this law and says, "I repeat, this is one of the most important votes you will cast in the Senate this year. When silence comes from a Congress too busy to renew the Violence Against Women Act after a decade, it reinforces that sense of worthlessness. It's clear that the indifference of the Congress and the American government has troubled the 47-year-old Oscar winner. This was the third time that Angelina asked the representatives of the U.S. Congress to revise the law to control domestic violence. This law was first sent to the Senate in 1990 by Joe Biden, who was then a senator, with the aim of reducing domestic and sexual violence. A later version was included in a bill signed by then-President Bill Clinton 4 years later. Congress has since reauthorized and extended the Violence Against Women Act 3 times.
Senator Joe Biden invited them to speak.
Battered women need to be taken seriously. Proper police response can prevent what happened to me from happening to someone else. Thank you.
Thank you.
The story of domestic violence in the United States and the law to deal with it is a paraphrase of the saying, "The law often shows its teeth, but does not bite." The United States has moved away from the slogan of creating equal conditions and ideal and happy life for women. In a way, this shows America cannot be a good model for other societies. Feminist slogans try to make women equal to men in all matters. For example, the society should witness that women are beaten less. But why did feminism and women's movements target the family to achieve this goal? It was already known that a woman without a family would be disarmed. And that's how it happened. In practice, women still did not get their real rights. Until yesterday, they were under male violence at home. But today, they are under the domination of employers and cheap forces. They are now also responsible for financing themselves, a task that, at least in the distant years, was the responsibility of men. A century has passed from the American women's efforts to escape domestic violence and achieve equality. Yet domestic violence still takes three victims every day. Families are broken. Women are employed in menial jobs. And the salary and benefit system still consider women as second-hand labor. Kindergartens have expanded, but next to girls' high schools, right beside unmarried mothers. Joni Ernst, a Republican senator, is also a victim of sexual and domestic violence.
Allah, Allah, ya Allah, 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 ya Allah, salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi al-Mujtaba, wal-Ali al-Kiram. Allah, Allah, ya Allah, 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 ya Allah, salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi al-Mujtaba, wal-Ali al-Kiram.
Don't you worry, follow the sign, leave the story to the divine. Free yourself and say what's true. Be yourself though you may be few.
Allah, Allah, ya Allah, 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 ya Allah, salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi al-Mujtaba, wal-Ali al-Kiram. Allah, Allah, ya Allah, 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 ya Allah, salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi al-Mujtaba.
Straight into my soul, you know in hardship I changed my goals. Now I realize I was so unwise, abandoned your advice.
Faced with your pride,
help was always near if we persevered,
if we held up
just for a while.
Allah, Allah, ya Allah, 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 ya Allah, صلي على المصطفى الهادي المجتبى والآل الكرام. الله الله يا الله 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 يا الله صلي على المصطفى الهادي المجتبى والآل الكرام.
My life is empty without you. Nothing I've gained is without you. If you are pleased, my soul can breathe. Where would I be without you? My heart now flees these worldly dreams, yearning for mercy from you. Now I realize I was so unwise, abandoned your advice,
faced with your trial.
Help was always near if we persevered,
if we held up
just for a while.
Allah, Allah, ya Allah, 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 ya Allah, salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi al-Mujtaba, wal-Ali al-Kiram. Allah, Allah, ya Allah, 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 ya Allah, salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi al-Mujtaba, wal-Ali al-Kiram.
Good morning to you all. Greetings from Tehran. You are listening to Iran Radio, and I'm your host for the next hour. We start off this hour's programs with For Humanity, a variety of subjects from the Holy Quran, which predominantly tend to be social issues, are presented in this program. After that, we have Round the World with reporters. Reporters from around the world tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Listen to fascinating reports from countries both near and afar. And we round up this hour's programs with The Key. The program presents short answers to doubts and ambiguities concerning various Islamic and Shia topics. Stay with us.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Hussein and you're listening to your program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program we talk about different Quranic concepts and Islamic teachings pertaining to humanity. And a couple of previous episodes we started covering a very good book in this regard. This is titled A 250-Year-Old Person, which is a combination of different lectures delivered by His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, covering the biographies and the lifestyle and the seerah of the Prophet of Islam Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and the great leaders of Islamic Ummah from his pure progeny. So by covering the lifestyle and the lessons from the life of these great leaders, we get to know more about Islamic standards and Islamic virtues, teachings about or of humanity. So we talked about the Battle of Trench. We were talking about the challenges posed by the Jewish community in Medina and the greatest treason and betrayal that they displayed during the time of the Battle of the Trench. As you know, the Battle of Trench was a very intense battle or situation for Muslim community in Medina. So the army of pagans, they were very huge army, including, covering different people from different tribes. The other name for it is Battle of Ahzab, confederates. Actually, there is this surah in the Holy Quran, this chapter titled Ahzab, which covers some of the stories of this battle. And إِذْ جَاءُكُمْ مِنْ فَوْقِكُمْ, when they came to you from above and from below, and وَإِذْ ذَاقَتِ الْقُلُوبُ, and when بَلَغَتِ الْقُلُوبُ الْحَنَاجِرِ, when the hearts came to your throat, it was so intense that وَزُلْزِلُوا هُنَالِكَ ابْتُلِيَ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ, it was a time that believers went through a great test. وَزُلْزِلُوا,